Every year, Utah welcomes approximately 1,000 new refugees. They arrive from places like Somalia, Iraq, Afghanistan, Sierra Leone, and Burma. They arrive to escape conflict, religious persecution, or political oppression. They arrive with few possessions and little knowledge of American life. Yet, they arrive with optimism for the freedoms and opportunities that most of us take for granted. Utah is home to 35,000 refugees, with the vast majority residing in Salt Lake County. Refugees are becoming an important demographic in the community, but their stories are rarely told, and their own small communities are not well understood by native Utahns. So this is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today on this program, we're airing a discussion that was recorded on November 11th, 2014, to help better understand the local refugee community living in the Salt Lake Valley. The panelists include Raul Yamul, the volunteer coordinator with Catholic Community Services. Beth Garska is Community Outreach Director for the English Skills Learning Center, a local nonprofit that serves adult immigrants and refugees whose first language isn't English. And Alex Nendekrio is a community leader from Burundi. He grew up as a refugee and has lived in the U.S. for the last 7 years. The moderator is Gunnar Nix, a student at the University of Utah.
Okay, so just first off, I think we should go over what a refugee is, because I doubt everyone here knows what a refugee is. I know a few months ago I didn't really know exactly what a refugee is. So would someone like to kind of briefly explain what a refugee is, how you become a refugee?
From the word itself, refugee means people who are seeking refuge. But we have this United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees who basically gave us a different definition for refugee. The refugees that we have now in the world are those people who are particularly persecuted in their own country. You have so many reasons for that, but majority of the reason is religion and the color of their skin. And they are persecuted, and as soon as they go out of their country, they are considered refugees.
It's not to be confused with internally displaced persons. It's not to be confused also with refugees who are being removed from their country because of climate change. We are here, I think, talking today for refugees who have been resettled. So there are over 15 million refugees in the world. Chances are you've heard about a lot of refugees in the media recently from Syria. And many of the refugees that are existing today aren't necessarily resettling. 1% of refugees resettle to different countries. The United States happens to be the one that resettles the most refugees. You can combine all the other countries, and America takes in all of those and then some. The next country is Australia, followed by Canada. So we're in a really wonderful place here in the United States where we get to meet some really fascinating people, really with deep, rich culture. And for the last 5 or 6 years, we've been seeing mostly refugees from Iraq, Somalia, Sudan, Bhutan, and Burma. No doubt Alex over here represents a population that came over to us too.
Well, specifically about refugees, when you ask who's a refugee, I came to America as a refugee as well. It's basically, I always say it's not a good thing to be called a refugee. No one wants to be a refugee, but sometimes don't have a choice. Most personally, I was born in Rwanda, but I left Rwanda in 1994 after genocide and lived in Tanzania for almost 17 years. So my parents were born in Burundi, grew up there, moved from Burundi to Rwanda, and they were born there, and then moved to Tanzania, and then from Tanzania to here. When they ask me where you're from, sometimes it takes me a second to figure out what to say. Basically, there's kind of the social differences that create the war back then in Burundi for the last 45 years. So that's probably most of the people from Burundi, when you ask them, where are you from? Some of the kids, they kind of lost their self-esteem. They don't want to say they're from Burundi because they feel good about it. They don't want to talk about it. Some of them will be like, I'm from Tanzania, but they're not really from Tanzania. They're from Burundi, but because they grow up there, they never get a chance to be in their own country. They never had that ownership of being who they are. But it happened already, but most of them are happy to be here and are supportive and they appreciate your help and appreciate everybody here to be able to be interested to talk about it and to see what we can do more.
Thank you. So you mentioned there's about 15 million refugees worldwide. Do you know how many about are in Utah alone?
Yeah, in Utah alone, there are over 50,000 refugees. Many people are shocked by that number, and that's not including second migration. So that means people who maybe have resettled over to New York, Texas, other places around the country, but then have moved on their own choice to come to Utah, maybe because of economic opportunities, or maybe because they have family here.
We receive 1,300 people every year in the state of Utah. That's between 60 to 80,000 for the whole United States. So about less than 2% comes to Utah for every year. Just that's the number that we basically resettle in the state of Utah.
And coming this next fiscal year, we're expecting more children than adults coming with the families than we've seen before.
Right. So out of those 15 million refugees or that large number of refugees in Utah alone, do you know about how many are men, women, or children, or kind of the breakdown of that?
About 80% of those who are still in the refugee camps are either children or women. And we are talking about the 40 to 50,000 in the United States, in the state of Utah alone. That's not part of the 15 million. The 15 million is the number who are still in the refugee camps.
And I think these numbers can also be mirrored in the agencies that we offer to the community. So, for example, where I work at, 70% of our clients are women.
Great. And how does one become a refugee that comes to Utah, let's say?
It's actually a long process. First of all, a lot of those people who are going out of the border of their country, considered as refugees, not all of them are already in the refugee camp right away. Because you have to consider that one of the things that are required to be a refugee is the legitimacy to become a refugee, and most of them needs to have the identification. A lot of those people pretending to be refugees in the refugee camps are not really refugees, and that alone is already something that these people who really are seeking refuge in those refugee camps are taken advantage of. It's not a perfect organization that we are talking about. It's not a perfect program. People are still taking advantage when they go to these refugee camps. So for these people who are legitimate refugee, they have to have the identification. That's one of the hardest things for these people seeking refuge, and they are still considered the second-class refugees because they don't have the identification. So when they become legitimate refugees, they apply for refugee resettlement to a third country. That is the durable solution that we have been looking for and trying to do. But looking at the number of 15 million, and we only resettle close to 250,000 every year for these refugees, we are talking about at least 60 years before we can resettle all these people from the refugee camp. That is if there's no replacement of refugees. But just this year, we looked at about 3 million people that have been new refugees in the refugee camps in the Middle East. So applying for the resettlement to a third country, it takes so much time, so much money, and that's the reason why less than 1% of the refugees are being resettled in a third country.
I think, Alex, did you want to say anything? I don't want to jump ahead of you.
No, just go ahead.
Okay. So if someone goes through the application process through the UNHCR, there's an opportunity where they can say, I want to resettle perhaps in America, or I want to resettle here or there, but that's not guaranteed. A lot of the times, the UNHCR is looking for family reunification. But so what does that look like? The UNHCR is working with the United States Homeland Security Department, Department of State, and then their Department of State are working with a number of different agencies statewide. So here in Utah, we have a very unique office called the Refugee Services Office, and that's through the Department of Workforce Services. And through that, because the refugee program for the United States is for sustainable self-sustainability, we're saying, hey, we can only have up to about 1,100 or so refugees per year because we can have that support. So there's a lot of refugees that come to Salt Lake City because of the uniqueness and the collaboration and opportunities that exist here.
Well, according to my experience, when I was in Tanzania, when during the process of moving refugees, specifically those who were coming from Burundi, I didn't have any idea where I was going to. Only thing I knew was that I was going to America. The group I came with, most of them were seeking to go out and seek for a new home. And because of that, even if you ask them, there's no choice when they're doing that. I don't know how they do it in the system, but because what you're looking for is just to go out and looking for a new home. So I didn't know where I was going until the final process. When we're doing cultural orientation, that's when they tell you, this is where you're going, this is where you're expecting there. This is the kind of people you're going to be seeing there. So basically, when I sailed to the United States of America, I sailed to Tucson, Arizona, and I lived there for 2 years and a half, and then I moved to Utah because my sister was here in Utah. So basically, some of them depends. You can be all over the United States of America. When as soon as they get here, they start talking to each other, and then they find each other, and then they try to live close by, so that way they can be able to help one another to go to adjust and see if they can minimize the problems they may face during this transition.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about what your organizations do. So let's say a refugee comes newly to, you know, the Salt Lake International Airport. They just touched down. They're probably a little lost. How do you or your organizations help these refugees in that situation?
Catholic Community Services is one of the two organizations who are authorized to resettle refugees in the state of Utah. IRC is the other one. So about 2 to 3 weeks prior to the arrival of a family coming from refugee camp, we will get the information from ORR, its Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is under the State Department. And when we get this, there are items or things that are listed in the what you can call bio of these families who are arriving. We can expect that somebody who is sick, somebody who has difficulties or handicap, those things, we are informed right away. So at least we are able to prepare for the arrival of the family. And with the funding from the United States government through the Refugee Act of 1980, there is a funding that is basically allotted for preparation for the arrival of the family, which is what we call reception and placement. This is where we talk about the apartments, where they will be housed as soon as they arrive, how all those things that are needed to house them, the beds and all the furniture that are required. Those are part of the Refugee Resettlement Act that was provided for the refugees. So when they arrive at the airport, at least we know that they are coming at the time that they are scheduled to. We know the flight arrival, exactly what time, except when we have delays. So we try to, as much as possible, have the people to receive them at the airport. And it's always wonderful when we have volunteers who receives them at the airport. That's when we start the process of having these people gaining their trust and the respect that they deserve, long deserve, when they are in the refugee camp. So at least we have the ability to know that they are coming. We have the ability to be able to prepare for their arrival. And hopefully when they arrive, tired from 34 to 36 hours of flight from the refugee camp to the United States, to the state of Utah, they can just lay their head on the bed, even not even thinking of eating. All they want to do is rest.
So beyond family mentoring that Catholic Community Services offers, which, by the way, I've done and is a really amazing experience, and I met the family at the airport, the English Skills Learning Center offers, as I mentioned, ESL classes in Salt Lake County. And so one of the services that we provide is language instruction. So if you can imagine, like Alex said, living in another place for 17 years, 20 years, whatever the case may be, people might not be educated. People may be educated. people may not know how to read and write in their own language, but they might speak 5 different languages. Everyone has a very unique background, and one of the things that when they come here, Catholic Community Services International Rescue Committee really tries hard to find jobs for these families. The kids are in school, they're registered, they're attending, but the parents, their first task is to get a job. Now, if they're not qualified or they don't have the skill set to do that, in addition to that, just needing to know the language, they are enrolled in either a full-time ESL program like Granite Peaks or Horizonte to learn the language of this land. But if they can't do that, they are referred over to our program. And so we teach adults how to literally hold a pencil, how to draw shapes, how to recognize numbers, how to draw letters, how to have those sound identifications. Beyond moving from an emergent reader, we have books like this, the Sam and Pat, where we have volunteers that we train and supervise and sometimes team teach with, so we can go ahead and teach some really basic English. Beyond that point, we have other programs. One's called Empowering Parents, where if you have children in an elementary school and you haven't gone and attended an American school system, you don't know what to expect. You don't know that you can interact with your kids' teachers or go and talk to the principal. So we have another program where we're teaching basic English, but we're also teaching the skill set to know how to talk how to call in if your child is sick, how to read a report card, how to know the dynamics for a parent-teacher conference, how to talk about bullying. And so we have other materials that we use in addition to curriculum that we've already created that we pass along to our volunteers. But in addition to that, folks who come here with refugee status are eligible to get a green card after a year. They are eligible to go ahead and apply for citizenship after 4 years and 9 months. So in addition to some job readiness programs and other basic English classes, we also have a citizenship program where we're teaching them the civics, so 100 questions that maybe a lot of our volunteers feel really nervous about when it comes to teaching a citizenship class. But teaching them that, teaching them reading, teaching them writing, teaching them the English that they need to know for their interview. And it's a very moving process to be a teacher for citizenship, because that is really showing and giving somebody and going through the process of someone who doesn't have citizenship to their own country and getting it here in the United States and being able to have their Social Security income and other benefits, having the ability to vote when their voice wasn't heard before. And so these are things that we do. We also offer an internship, and I have other information here, so that's my plug. You guys can come and talk to me afterwards.
That's Beth Garska, a community outreach director for the English Skills Learning Center that serves adult immigrants and refugees who are living in Utah and whose first language is not English. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. Today we're airing a panel discussion recorded a few weeks ago on understanding Utah's local refugee community. We'll be right back. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. If you're just joining us, today we're airing a discussion about Utah's local refugee community. Essentially, who are they? Where did they come from? And what were the conditions they were escaping? And also, how do refugees arrive and how are they helped to settle in Utah? And how are they slowly integrating into our society? This is Raul Yomul, who is the volunteer coordinator with Catholic Community Services.
One of the things that the public knows about the refugee is they are here, that they will be supported throughout their lives. The worst thing that we can say is volunteers always think that they will be teaching them this, teaching them that, riding the bus and all that. That's not the most important thing. Remember, these people have been in refugee camps not just for a week or a year, or a lot of them are have been in the refugee camp over decades. And most of the children that we have coming, they were born in the refugee camps. So if you talk about the culture of these people, the culture of the parents are completely different from the culture of the children. The children's culture is the culture in the refugee camp. The parents may have the values, the traditions that they have from when they come to, from their country to the refugee camp, but the children basically only knows the culture in the refugee camp. So when they come to the United States, we always consider not only their religion, not only where they came from, what refugee camp they ended up in, what kind of education they got from those refugee camps, do they have jobs over there? A lot of them have been stagnant over the years, and a lot of them have lost even their self-confidence, even the trust in themselves, even the respect in themselves. That's why I am the volunteer coordinator for Catholic Community Services, and I try as much as I can to get as much volunteer as we have. People who will be human beings to these people when they arrive. That's the most important thing that we can give them, we can provide them, to bring back that trust, respect, and confidence to these people. If we are able to do that, all those other learnings are easy. But until we have given that trust and respect, it will be so hard for them to adapt to the culture in this country.
And the piece, really quick on that, something that the English Skills Learning Center really tries to promote is integration. So not taking away someone's culture, but showing them this is how the American culture is, and how this is language and culture, and how that relates to each other. So that's something that, again, volunteers are a huge piece when it comes to working with refugees, because we're not saying you as a refugee need to come and be this quote-unquote American, but we're going to meet you halfway. So it's a really powerful process, I think, no matter which, if you want to volunteer or get involved within an agency, that you'd have that experience.
So, so they covered almost everything. In our culture, they say that if you speak to a man in a language you understand, it goes to his head. But if you speak to a man in his language, it goes to his heart. So what it means is that for my community, basically, we come together because we come at certain different times. So being there for a long time, sometimes we learn more and we gather more information that can help us move on. Those newcomers, when they come in, they receive the first service from settlement agencies and other, of course, refugee providers have been helping according to responsibility therefore. But also as who've been here for enough, they feel more welcome when they approach us and they get to see us. They feel like, oh, we are not a new country anymore. We keep seeing our own people. And then by approaching us and seeing with them, we're helping them understand. Sometimes they have different thoughts in their mind. This is what I'm going to be getting. This is what I'm expecting to get in America. This is the kind of things I'm looking for. But on the other hand, it's the other way around. So when they come and stay with us, we go through different things. We share experience we had the first time we came. We share with them some of the challenges that we face, which is the challenge basically what we tell them is, specifically me, when I tell them, it's too hard to live here, it's too busy country, I don't understand English, I don't understand what the situation is, it's too much. So on the term, of course, it is too much, but, you know, there's always a where and a where, you know. So what I tell them is, the challenge is not the sign or it's not the stop sign, but it is the guidelines. So basically, by showing up, giving an example where you started from and where you're heading to, and giving some steps and some materials they might use, it helps a lot. Because they feel like you're talking to someone who already been in the same situation, you're talking to someone already who's talking the same language, which would be probably different from anyone else telling them. Mm-hmm. They can get it, they can sit down there, and then they get confused. Because it's too wide information, it's too much for them. But when they come back, in some based organizations like the one I formed, it's much easier because we understand very well who they are, where they came from, and what they think. Sometimes there's a culture and a language barrier. They don't want to say everything. They may hide some information, they may know, which is really, really hard. So don't be surprised if you want to go on the volunteer for the first 3 months, having nothing, probably you can figure, oh, what kind of people are these? They kind of they don't know you yet. They're not open yet to you. They're trying because they've been in different, you know, problems in their own country. They don't release any information. They feel like, are you investigating me? I mean, what's going to happen if I see these things? Probably there's something else they have their own secret in their life. They don't want to share these things. And which is the key you may need to be able to understand them and help them better. But the problem is, how do we get them those words out? You know, it's about simple. I mean, try to be simple, use very simple vocabulary, be friendly, and try kind of to make yourself that you understand by little by little. But I would say start from the bottom, no foundation, and try to be like them. Because if you are not like them, then there's a gap right there.
Yeah, in short, whatever you think is so easy for them to understand, all those mundane things for us, it's so important for them to understand. Because a lot of us, we have expectations ourselves, but most of those expectations are not really existing with these people. And all I can always say is, you are asking, how can I help these people? It's mostly discoveries. There are things that you will even prepare lesson plan if you're a teacher because you want them to learn fast, but that's really not happening right there. You will discover that as soon as you visit this family, there are things that are more important to them that you never even think that is even things to discover for these people. So it's really hard for them to understand us. Because ask yourself, what kind of culture do we really have in the United States? People from all over the world. I myself is an immigrant to this country back in 1986. I have been here for almost 30 years already. But there are still a lot of things that I am discovering. A lot of things that I feel that I do it awkwardly. And this will happen to these people as soon as they arrive here. They cannot have that confidence to do a lot of things because they are afraid. It differs from people coming from different parts of the world. There are people coming from Iraq, people coming from Congo, a lot of people here are even afraid to be with because they are afraid of all those communicable diseases. It's really something that we have to understand. And being here, I am so grateful because you will be understanding what the refugee situation is in the state of Utah and in this country or in the world. And we are really so happy that you are here.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm going to come back to that really quick, but I just wanted to ask Alex really quick a couple quick questions. You're a local community leader. Could you talk a little bit about how you came to be that local community leader and really quick, kind of some of the biggest challenges facing you in your community?
Yeah, that are good questions. Basically, when I came to America, I have different thoughts and feelings about being here. I knew, I thought when I go to America, I'll go to school, and then everything will take care of itself. But when I came here, it was a different case. So I had a little bit of issue with even my case manager from the settlement agents, trying to talk to him, hey, this is what you want. This is what I need to get, you know, as soon as possible. And the customers are like, the first thing you do, you need to get a job. Instead of going to school, and then when you get a job, you work on your schedule and then find school and then do both of them. Like, oh, no, you kidding me. So it was really, really hard. So from there, it was really challenging, but because what I had in my mind, it didn't go the way I wanted. So I worked hard, what I did. Of course, I quit. The first job I had was about 2 hours away from the place I was living. And of course, it was about 4 hours wasting back and forth. And also it was a very, really, really difficult job to do. And I was like, woke up 3 in the morning, you come back 7 p.m. I was like, I'm not going to know where's the hospital, I'm not going to know where's the school, I'm not going to know where's the library. I was kind of locked somewhere there. And I quit the job. And he got mad at me. Why did you quit? I said, sometimes, because as he said, you may do something thinking it's going to help better, but that's not what you want. So I decided to change. I said, you know what, I can make it. What I did, I made friends who had been here for a long time, so I can learn from them. As soon as I made a friend, that's those who told me, this is how you get in school. This is how you, this is where you get some cheap clinics, which just in case you're sick. So, and because they come with a big group of specific people from Burundi, there are people who are not educated. There are people who've been in the refugee camp more than 35 years. So I can see they're struggling. They have their families. They've been living depending on donations given to them. So they really have that problem. So this is why I come up an idea of becoming a leader. I figured out who we are, the change. You know, we are the problems, and we can solve the problems ourselves. So, and before someone else step in, I got to do something. So I can tell them, this is what I have done, but I'm kind of failing somewhere. And then they jump in, they help, and they guide you, and then you go through it. So because of those people, they feel like they're left alone. Even if they receive the help, they support the getting from different agencies, but not enough for them. They still need to have that ownership, because you are telling me, this is what you need to do. This is what you're supposed to be doing. This is the steps. And you give me that information, but I'm not ready to do on my own to go through this. So, and then I was like, okay, what can we do then? We have the power, we have the language, we have the culture, we understand ourselves, we know where we came from, we know what we're looking for. Why don't we come together and talk about these situations and these problems and come up with some solutions? Probably there's a way of solving problems according to the culture. Let's say in families, you know, couples or issue with the kids, sometimes we have the best way talking about it as a family or according to the culture, making sure we don't break any culture. So that way we don't kind of bring some situation in parents. Some parents are really like, I came here because of my kids. If they didn't have my kids, I should even stay there because I'm confused. I don't know what to do. So it comes to my mind, what can I do to do this? I went through that same experience. So should I just be quiet and ignore it? The answer was no. So we come up with a group of five people, sat down, meeting every week, try to figure out the best way of doing it. With the help of the Health Services Office, they have what they call capacity building programs. We come up with an idea of, you know, creating an organization. It's the best organization specifically for Burundi, because, as I said, we are the problem, so we can be the solution as well. So with the help, for example, you coming to volunteer, because we know what we want, it's much easier for you and for us as well, because we started. And then you're here just to continue and help to go through the process. So some of the challenges, as we're talking about here, basically the language is number one, because if you don't know the language, then it's a problem. You know, number two, I would say there's a culture barrier. So if you don't break the barrier of the culture, then there's a problem. Because you may try to help me out, because there's a barrier, culture barrier, then how are you gonna break that gap? It's gonna be hard. But with the help of being together, as people from our own country, Burundi, we have to figure out how much do we know? What kind of things we need to keep? What kind of things that are really dangerous for us that we cannot apply in this country, but we've been applying them back home? When you do it here, it could be a violence, it could be a crime. It's kind of coming together, so kind of minimize the problems, so that way we can help one another. And number two, our kids, as he was talking about here, when they come here, they adjust very quickly. The language, just 2 months, they'll be ready for that. You know, so they go to school, they shop, those kind of skills, this kind of culture in around the students around there, they come home, they're different from parents. And the parents will be complaining, oh, my kids are not listening. My kids are really, really changing, which is good. We want them to change and learn and be able to adjust. But the problem is the parents are still there, somewhere there, and the kids are going somewhere here. So they feel like kids are over-controlling parents, but not really at all. It's just the matter of understanding. So parents are just in that level, they're not getting able to go out and meet people, but kids are able to do these things through school, they're on the media all the time, social media and everything. So this is why basically we come up with our own based organizations, because we wanted to help ourselves and also go out and connect with resources so we can move on.
Alex Nendekrio is a refugee from Burundi. He has lived in the U.S. for the last 7 years. He now serves as a community leader and spokesman for other refugees from Burundi who have settled in Utah. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. A few weeks ago, a panel convened at the University of Utah to discuss the work involved with helping refugees from across the world to settle in Utah. Each year, Utah welcomes approximately 1,000 new refugees. In fact, one of every 10 foreign-born immigrants arriving in Utah are refugees. They arrive from countries across Africa, Asia, Eastern Europe, and the Middle East. Basically, any place where conflict, ethnic cleansing, religious persecution, or political oppression have forced them to flee their homes or home countries. Many cross borders into second countries or live in camps for months, sometimes years, before being granted refugee status by the U.S. State Department. Each year, Congress approves the number of refugees who will be invited to resettle in the U.S. and given a pathway to employment and citizenship. The government then works with local agencies like Catholic Community Services and the International Rescue Committee to help refugees settle in Utah. Again, today's panelists include Raul Yamul, volunteer coordinator with Catholic Community Services. Beth Garska is community outreach director for the English Skills Learning Center. Alex Nendekrio is a refugee and a community leader from Burundi. And the moderator is Gunnar Nix, a student at the University of Utah.
What are some of the most fun or enjoyable or fulfilling moments you've had as you've worked with the local refugee community?
I have one example. It's not local anymore, but they were local before. There's this family that arrived from Burma, and they went through Malaysia, the refugee camp. It's not a refugee camp. It's a settlement of refugees from Burma through Malaysia. When they came here, it's a family of seven, single mother, and we saw the bio, all those things, so we prepared for that. 2 weeks down the road, one of the children told the volunteers, the mother is HIV positive. So actually, the way the child told us, the volunteer, my mother has AIDS. So imagine the volunteers. They are into that. They call us, what is the real story about this? The mother ends up to be HIV positive. At least we have educated volunteers who understand that they cannot get this disease or this virus from the family. So they continued on helping them. After 6 months, the family moved to Florida. That was 3.5 years ago. Just 2 weeks ago, I got an email from the volunteers telling us that the family called the volunteer. And they were so happy because the mother has a job, the eldest daughter has a job, the children are all in school, and they already purchased a house. Imagine just 3.5 years from the time they arrive here with all the problems they have, we will hear all these things. The very first 6 months or the very first year of the family that arrives here, a lot of times you don't even feel any gratitude from them because they don't know that. They don't even know what the word volunteer means. They expect that the people helping them are being paid to help them. They have no idea about being a volunteer. So when they learn later on in their life how important the time that these volunteers help them, how precious the hours that these volunteers help them, because now they are discovering how important time in America is. That's the time when they feel so grateful that they have volunteers who help them. Who were these people who helped us at the time when we needed it most?
So I have so many examples from someone who can show you that they can read the letter S and they can make it written down from the letter F, because that's confusing, right? They can see the difference between a Z and an N, because if you're not educated, they look kind of similar, right? People who can make a difference and notify, you know, have notice a difference between a B and a P sound. I have volunteers who have been with us for 10 years. I have volunteers who have helped a family get their citizenship, and the mom is saying, you know what's next? I want to get my driver's license. And we have volunteers helping them out with that. And that's really pretty exciting because driving is a big deal in the United States. Public transportation is not always the easiest. And Alex talked about commuting 2 hours one way. That's difficult, you know? Imagine being a family of eight and having to go get groceries on the bus. That's a difficult thing. So having a volunteer help out and get somebody their driver's license, it's pretty incredible. Beyond that, we have a lot of our volunteers aren't necessarily from America themselves. We have this one young lady here who was a student at West High School, and she said, I want to make a difference because I saw my parents come here, and I can speak this language with them, but I want to kind of pay it forward. And she's been a volunteer of ours now for a number of years. She's a student at the University of Utah. She's helping her third student pass the citizenship test, which is really exciting. And so there are so many different pieces, but beyond just like the language component, there are just victories. You get close with your students, and it's not a requirement to do so, but you end up having this rapport, you have this trust, you have this, you want to learn about each other, but you're so respectable about not imposing yourself on someone else or trying to hear about their story, even though you're really curious to know what they've experienced, because you probably haven't experienced anything like that before. And so there's stories that are shared and told, and global perspectives that even with limited English, they can tell you, no teacher, in the bedroom, you don't eat there. And no teacher, you take your shoes off when you go inside. And they'll do these different and say these different things when you're teaching them the relevant vocabulary that they need to know. And that's really exciting. And in the process of that, you get to hear that they attended a parent-teacher conference and didn't need to know or use a translator. Or I worked with a gentleman who didn't know how to spell his name. And now he calls me and texts me up and he says, ¿Qué pasa? And I'm like, wait, I thought we were speaking English. And he is also a man who bought a home. And that was incredible. And I was so surprised and shocked. And he said, I didn't want to tell you until it was done. And just to see people flourish and being able to be there right beside them and be their advocate and be their friend to help them with the process that they don't know. It's indescribable, and I hope every single one of you gets that experience either through us or someplace else.
If I can get a minute, I have a story that I want to share. I know Beth already heard this story, but it's worth telling everybody about this story. It's about a volunteer who had been with a family who arrived prior to summer months, so the children are not in school. It's a family of eight, mother and father, with six children, ranging from 5 to 14 years old. And this volunteer has been helping us for so long, but on this particular time, she wanted to be really showing these people how a lot of things that needs to be learned. So she prepared a 3-hour lesson plan for these children because they're not in school. So she was even whistling and singing while driving, going to the apartment. And as soon as she parked the car, she went to the door, knocked at the door. She discovered that the door is open. And she was frustrated and she was flared up right away because one of the things that we teach the family, lock the door because for your security. So she pushed the door and here comes the suds of soap coming from the dishwasher. And after 4 hours helping the family clean up and all that, she was sitting there at the couch with the children. And that's when she discovered, it's not what I'm going to teach materially or physically to these people. It's the relationship that I am building with them. That is the most important thing.
We don't have much time left, so I want to open it up to questions. So we'll start back here. And when you ask a question, just say your name and like your major.
My name's Steve. I'm a political science major. I kind of have to take this question here. With all the immigration stuff going on, we hear the right say how what the president is doing with amnesty kind of flies in the face of those who have gone through that long, arduous process of coming here legally, whether it's immigrants coming here legally or people seeking refuge, refugees coming here. Through that long process of waiting, I was wondering what your feelings were towards what's going on with, you know, the amnesty situation or immigration that way, coming from a refugee standpoint.
Well, for the refugees, it's with the Refugee Act of 1980, They come in here, they're legal. So they're not part of the illegal immigrants that we have over here. And basically, there's funding from the U.S. government for them to be brought in the United States. So with regards to that, with the amnesty, we are basically not in tune with that. Did I answer your question?
Well, I'm just wondering, just your... I wasn't making like the comparison of that. I was just wondering, your feeling of having to go through that long process, but then seeing people in this country perhaps not having to go through the same the long process of coming, if that makes sense.
So I can speak a little bit towards that, because in our agency we serve refugees, we serve asylum seekers, we serve immigrants, we serve illegal immigrants. And really, the fact of the matter and the standpoint that we take is that they're all here to learn English, and we're going to serve them. And the fact of the matter is that they have a lot of similarities. And so we're going to treat them just like a person.
We have a question over here.
Hi, my name is Nora. My major is in economics. Thank you for being here today. And my question for you is, I've actually gotten really close with a young girl from Burma, and about 6 of her family members have been slaughtered within the past couple of years. I just don't know where to go. I mean, of course, we're there to support her and we invite her to things, but she's only here. She's the only female. She has a dad and 2 brothers, and she sometimes doesn't even have basic sanitary things at her home. And I just want to know what programs or what things would you recommend for her or for me to help her, because she's just a young girl and obviously we want to see her flourish. So thank you.
There's a lot of programs that are available in the community. Big Brothers, Big Sisters is a great organization that you could probably get involved with, and they like to provide opportunities for ways that there could be a relationship there. There could be trust. There can be different exposure. There's also, if it's not CCS or IRC, Asian Association Immigrant and Refugee Center also has opportunities to get hygiene kits and case management and things of that nature. But from an educator standpoint, and from a standpoint of me being in refugee camps on the borderland of Thailand and Burma, one of the things that I've really experienced that worked well is art. So being able to provide people an avenue, if it's through Play-Doh, if it's through Spy Hop Productions and their abilities to capture stories, or through Salt Lake Community College Community Writing Center over by the library downtown, there's a lot of different opportunities and resources. And if you find yourself in a situation like that and you don't know how to help, but you don't know who to ask, the Refugee Services Office team is a really great connector in the community. And I think if you can call up any agency too, you can call up CCS.
The number one for the CCS is the soup kitchen. Because a lot of us, number one thing we need is food. And we have the soup kitchen, CCS runs that. Right next to the soup kitchen we have the vegan center, where it's a day facility. It's not, we don't offer beds over there. But right next to those two facilities, we have the road home. Mm-hmm. So for those who are coming in with basically nothing, that area alone can help them for the short-term basis. And then from there are a lot of information that can be gathered, who to approach, where they can go to for additional help.
But the thing about it is that if the father or the brother have language ability, they're the ones in charge of their family. And you need to include them on that. And the other piece of that is that, just like Alex, there's a lot of refugee communities that are capacity building within their own. So you have like Mika, or you have other entities will have a community leader like Alex who can go out and help advocate and help their navigate through their own cultural pieces and the American system.
Hi, my name is Satine. I'm a political science economics major. I'm first generation American. My parents came from Iran. My father came 78, so right pre-revolution. My mother came in 1992. She came to this country. She learned English in Iran, and she was, you know, that's a really good thing that she had coming here, but there are many who don't. But my question is regarding, she lived through the war between Iran and Iraq. And so her and her sisters, especially her younger sisters, have severe post-traumatic stress disorder. And so, you know, I mean, that was 20 years ago that they went through that. But granted, there's a lot of people in parts of the Middle East right now that if they come here, there are a lot deeper issues to deal with that I think that English is not going to immediately solve. But obviously, English is important. But how do you deal with those students who are trying to learn English but have such a deep need for some sort of psychological care? Because, you know, for us, I mean, I grew up in a post 9/11 America. I've heard every terrorist joke in the book, and some of them are funny and some of them are not okay to say. But a lot of these students are coming into a culture where that's okay. So how do you kind of, you know, go through the sensitivity process of both this is what you've been through and how to adapt to our culture?
I can only answer for the refugee part of that. With the Refugee Act of 1980, when they come in here, there are provisions that are given to them. One of them is the health. They get the Medicaid for that. And through IRC and CCS, we have those people who are what we call the health coordinators. As soon as they have those problems, they are given the health orientation immediately, so they will be able to at least be able to use the provisions that they get from the Refugee Act of 1980. The hardest problem that we have seen is a lot of people don't disclose their real issue. And that's when they have to inform those people who have the ability to help them. And we know it's not that easy, but that's the only way that we can really help them is when they tell us the problem.
And in addition to that, as I said, we're coming from a different culture. Sometimes we seem not to trust someone else. But that's one of the reasons why I come up with an idea of having an organization so that we can discover what the problems are inside our community. So I think, I mean, for example, there's an issue in my community. It's much, if their program is not working, I will see if someone calls, hey, we visit this family, it seems to be everything's wrong or something is wrong here. But we don't know what's going on. They don't even want to tell us what's going on. But because I know, I'll go there and investigate, talk to them, and then I will be honest with them. This is what people think. This is what they feel about this situation. This might be a problem. Let's work on it. And they open up. Oh, okay. And if I go with them in that same home, they're going to tell them everything because they can see I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. And the best step to start with is to get to know them very well or to get to know someone who's trusted in our community. Because if I show up, say, oh, I think you need help. Because I know I'm working with them, of course they're like, oh, we need help. Because some of them, they will go for it. You know? For example, there's a time, there's a volunteer who wanted to do some activities with the kids in one home. And the volunteer felt going to the camping, it would be fun for them. And because of language barrier, going camping, because they've been in a very horrible situation in the refugee camp, in their own home, when people have been raped, when people have been killed, there's so many violence is going on. And the family was like, are you talking about camping again? I escaped this for about 2 years ago, and you're taking my kids to camp. So now I can see the gap. Parents feel so bad because of the experience they had about camp. It's all about camp, world camp. But the idea of volunteer was like, let's go for fun, you know, do something there with the kids that can be happy and try to learn something. And the parents' idea was like, oh, are you taking my kids to camp again? And I don't even want them to think about it. So the barrier there was that they don't understand each other. The volunteer had a good idea, and the person they have a good stand. So that way, the more you understand them, the more you work with the right person who knows the community very well, who knows the family very well, that's the best step to do it. I think that's what has been working for most of the people I've been working with.
Another point to your question is the English Skills Learning Center had a one-on-one program for quite some time, and that program has been phased out now because we have so many small group classes around the valley, which we're really pleased about. So it's an open entrance, open exit. So if someone has PTSD, for example, and maybe it's a client from Utah Health and Human Rights who is dealing with torture and traumatic experiences, but they've been recommended to go and learn English, it's at their pace. So maybe it's not number one priority for them, but it's open and available to them when they want to come.
Thank you so much for coming out. I just want to thank Beth, Raul, and Alex again. This was great, and I really loved the participation. We had some great questions, and thanks to the Hinckley Institute for hosting us and the International Leadership Academy. If you have more questions, you can come up to these wonderful folks afterwards. Thanks for coming out.
Can I just plug in something? Every second Thursday of the month, I do an orientation for Catholic Community Services with regards to the refugee program. It's not a non-commitment orientation. You may become volunteers or not, but it's a wonderful way of really understanding the refugee situation in the world.
Thanks today to the Hinckley Institute of Politics and the Honors College International Leadership Academy. This has been the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss, and this is KCBW.